On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. In the wake of more Ja Morant drama, should the Grizzlies move off of him or hold fast? And where on earth could he even land in the NBA? Plus, is OKC on track to break Golden State's win record? All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, I'm joined by my man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, I am enjoying myself thoroughly. I feel like I'm reaching my fall form. It's a lot of flannels. It's a lot of like this pattern, the official like older white guy vibe is really coming through right now. I'm in my element. I'm feeling good and I'm ready to put up some numbers. So hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
Yeah, you'd fit in right in with the Portland Trailblazers with that flannel Pacific Northwest look, right. Dan.
Also, my elite defense.
That's right. Unless it's the Lakers and on Monday night, which we can just kind of scrub from our memories. Danielle, let's get into the big number this week. I don't know if you've seen the news with Ja Morant lately, so we're going to hit that right here with this week's big number is 2. As in, that's the number of dunks that Ja Morant has had this season. 2.
1, 2.
That's it. That's not great. Because that's what known for.
I was going to say, the good news here, Tom, is that that's not really Ja Morant's thing, right? Like going right at the rim, trying to dunk on people. That wasn't really his bag.
It literally was his bag. Like that is what he's getting paid for, is his ability to jump over the defense, finish at a high level, and just he had springs for legs. And this is a huge story here because Ja Morant is evidently not happy about his role on the team and where things are going. He had some strong comments after Monday's game following his suspension. Basically, I wouldn't say strong, but passive aggressive in ways that conjured up a one Jimmy Butler where I don't have my joy. You know what? Let's get to the post game. Let's hear it right here. Ja Morant after Monday night's loss to the Detroit Pistons.
Were you and the coaching staff able to talk about what happened Friday and move on?
Y'all asked that question to them, huh?
What about for you?
Y'all asked that question, so y'all know the answer to that.
Do you feel like everything's been resolved?
Yeah. They told y'all that, right?
Well, yeah, but we didn't hear it from you.
Obviously, they can't go and tell y'all something I ain't say.
You feel like you get the same joy right now that we used to sing for you?
No.
Yeah, Tom, the monotone, monosyllabic, they said that, right? So you're fine. You don't need any more from me. It's all inviting more questions than it's answering, it feels like. And it kind of feels like none of the answers are going to be all that good.
No. All the answers here are like not going so well in Ja Morant world right now. He got suspended and then there was no kind of resolution to any of it. It seems that this is going to be a living, breathing storyline going forward, that whatever the front office and the coaching staff did to meet with him and try to have this be water under the bridge is evidently not working. And also the basketball stuff is not working, which is the worst part here, is that Ja Morant is not the same Ja Morant that was an all-star, all-NBA talent, most improved player of the year, the presumptive favorite as the next face of the NBA. At least here in America, I think we all wanted Ja Morant to be that guy because he was that electric. He was the Derrick Rose, the Russell Westbrook, the guy who could jump out of the gym and do things that what we say about Wemby now is we haven't seen things like this before. Ja Morant had that same kind of that sparkle to him where every time you watched him, you didn't know what you were going to get. And now if it's a reduced kind of he doesn't have those like jet fuel pack behind him. I don't know what Ja Morant is in this league right now. 2 dunks to the season. Both of them came in open, fast breaks, uncontested dunks, not in the half court, which we are very accustomed to seeing that he would just get downhill and then take off and launch into this ridiculous finish at the rim. And we talked about this last year, Dan, is like if he's not dunking over everybody and he's not finishing at the rim at a high level, he doesn't have the jump shot to be able to compensate for that lack of vertical threat. And so, Dan, a couple more numbers here. 55 dunks in as recently as four seasons ago, 58 dunks in 21-22, and now he's just got two. So he's basically getting a dunk every game back in the day, way back in the day when we were kids, Dan. And now Ja Morant is maybe you'll see it every couple games, you'll see him dunk. And I've got a couple other numbers here that I want to bring up. He's ninth percentile in isolations. So he's shooting, I think, 20% on isolations. Ninth percentile in terms of points per possession, according to Sport Radar. 16th percentile in spot-ups. He's 33 percentile in transition. And the good news is that he's 44th percentile in pick and rolls. So when a high watermark is below average in efficiency, and it's pick and rolls, which is the thing that you do, not a great sign, Dan. So after he was loafing the other night and caused the suspension, and probably, I shouldn't say caused the suspension. We don't really know exactly what the conduct detrimental to the team was, whether he said something or whether he did something behind the scenes, but certainly he had checked out. And the national audience, Blake Griffin specifically, made note of this in the Prime postgame coverage, is that Ja Morant basically threw in the towel. And that can't happen when you're the franchise player. So, Dan, it's just, this is bad stuff all around.
It's not great. You are right. We did talk about this a little bit back in the spring around when the Grizzlies dismissed Taylor Jenkins, and, you know, with whatever, like a week and a half left in the regular season. And the driving force for that seemed to be the decision organizationally or by Taylor Jenkins or both, to kind of decentralize the offense and move it away from such a steady diet of Ja Morant high pick and roll into, you know, that like Noah LaRoche space out system where it's more drive, cut, relocate, and it's fewer, you know, lower minutes, higher intensity, more democratic distribution. That did not sit very well with Ja Morant. It de-emphasized him. It reduced his touches and his numbers. They elevate Tuomas Isolo at the end of the season, and he goes super heavy into Ja Morant, super heavy into the high pick and roll. The production and the volume goes up dramatically. And then we start this season, and it's similarly, you know, the minutes are down. The rotation pattern is a little bit different. Shorter stints, you know, ideally to get him more fresh. That's kind of what Isolo is going after, coming over from Paris Basketball, and sort of a different fresh look at how he wants to manage the team. Now, this doesn't seem to be agreeing with Ja, even though the touches are there and the usage would still be there too. And so, and it's like they were 3-2 and up double digits at half against the Lakers when the bottom fell out here. And I think there's a lot of questions as to why that is happening. The on-court component, as you mentioned, Ja Morant, the whole idea is downhill, downhill, downhill. He gets to the rim. He gets into the paint. He can finish through traffic. He's like an explosive nuclear athlete that can go over the top of people, but he's going to get into the paint. And year over year since his rookie season, the share of his shots that have come at the rim have dropped. Nearly half of his shots, 49% as a rookie, came at the rim, according to Cleaning the Glass. Thus far this season, it's 26%. So basically half the frequency with which he's getting to the rim has been cut in half in these handful of years. His drives per game, down, down, down. He was 19 as a rookie. He was over 20 for three straight seasons. Now it's under 15 a game. And if you don't have that, as you mentioned, and you don't have the pull-up three-point shooting, as you've mentioned, and you don't have the steady catch-and-shoot three-point accuracy, then you're kind of left with a question of where the value proposition is to build the whole offense around Ja Morant. And so it all leaves you wondering, what is the best application of this player? Is it to be the centerpiece of an offense? I think we're seeing some concerns about that. And I thought it was a great line from our pal Chris Harrington at the Daily Memphian, who's covered Ja throughout his whole career, after Monday's loss to the Pistons. This was Chris, quote, "Maybe the burden on Morant is about more than spacing on the floor. There's a growing gap between what Morant is supposed to be and what he's actually been recently, and who can say how those pressures may weigh on him. I think that, I mean, that really feels like a bullseye to me. Like, everyone expects Ja Morant to be a superstar, including Ja Morant. And if he's not, you know, we've seen a lot of players with this. I mean, we haven't seen players with this exact skill set and this exact, you know, athletic profile, but guard who can get downhill and get to the rim and then, but doesn't have the whole rest of his game and then can't. There's not a whole lot of middle ground between star and not all that helpful. And this is awfully early for Ja Morant to be considering that kind of plummet, that sort of potential mortality, NBA mortality at 26 years old. But the trend lines aren't particularly compelling, and or like, certainly not positive. They're compelling, but in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Dan, I know might seem kind of trivial to say, oh, two dunks is such a headline number. But that was his game. You know, if Steph Curry just forgot how to shoot, or Kevin Durant was a foot shorter, we'd be like, they're not Steph Curry and Kevin Durant anymore. If Ja Morant does not have the ability to dunk or finish at the rim, or at least has less ability to do so. And that's kind of where we're at here, is we're not really sure if this is a physical limitation or if this is him just making a conscious effort, a long-term plan of, I don't want any more collisions in the air anymore at the rim. And this is something that I think a lot of players, as they get into the NBA year after year, they realize this is so much carnage on the body. Is to be able to have a long career, you might not want to have those mid-air collisions happening every time down the floor. So when you see, Ja Morant and his ability to get to the rack is diminished, and he's taking these threes and he's able to hit them at a high rate, that's great. But when he's not able to do those things, then that's really where it becomes a problem. And for Ja Morant, the lack of a jump shot, I'll throw some more numbers here at you, Dan. The lack of a jump shot, according to Synergy Sports, Sport Radar data, his jump shot is at fifth percentile. Zeroth percentile.
Yeah.
In catch and shoot jumpers, he scored 0.2 points per shot on catch and shoots, which is 1 and 14. 1 for 14 on catch and shoots. His dribble jumper is 11th percentile. His runner, good news, his runner is 94th percentile, which he's doing about 3-4 times a game. So if it's not runner, it basically is not an NBA shot at this point. Ja Morant doesn't have that toolkit that he once had. So he's making $39 million this season. He's making, I think the number is... 42 next season and 44.9 2 years from now. And so it all comes back to, if it's not Memphis, where does Ja Morant go with that contract? This isn't an expiring deal. He's going to be looking for an extension. Who is willing to acquire this kind of energy about him? The diminishing impact and his lack of ability to be the Ja Morant who was the face of the or the presumptive face of the NBA with all of those ridiculous dunks he used to have. If he's not that guy, I don't know how many teams are going to be calling Zach Kleiman and just saying, yeah, let's make a deal. But I kind
to your point, you invoked Jimmy Butler earlier in this conversation, and that, I think it's apt. Certainly the playbook certainly seems similar. You know, we saw Jimmy kind of quiet quit in Miami. But before Jimmy did that, he offered some examples of, like, this is what I can do at full strength. And Ja had some strong games at the beginning of the season. Jimmy without scoring is still able to impact the game at an elite level. And we've talked about this a number of times before. Jimmy can be a defensive quarterback that can, you know, captain a high quality defense. He can be a high volume, high efficiency isolation player to create for others. And if Ja, and we saw the other night that Pistons loss, the end of that game when Detroit needed a bucket, it was Cade Cunningham pigeon hunting Ja Morant. Come up here. We're getting you in a pick and roll. We're getting a switch, and I'm getting whatever I want. And if Ja Morant's that on defense, and he's not a floor spacer, somebody able to complement you, another on-ball player, and he's a there's that question of like how motivated or excited is he? It's you struggle to find the value proposition, I think, and I think that's where combine that with the contract. Yeah, I think the trade market's going to be awfully dicey for them to try to navigate.
Dan, can we just make the Sacramento Kings trade happen already? I feel like we're all going into this direction that just make this happen. It's so Kings inevitable fans. To me.
I just feel like the Kings fans, they have to feel like, I don't know, like the designated opponent for Mike Tyson or something like that. Like they just sort of show up and it's, yeah, you're the guy that we set up to be punched around. Like when you're looking for the example of a team that's not well run, that would make us make a kind of perhaps silly or impulsive decision. It's the Sacramento Kings. But when we go through this exercise and you start looking around yeah. where it might make some sense, like you start going down the list of teams and who's got a point guard and who doesn't have a point guard. Again, we did this in April when we were thinking about it, and it was after the Spurs had made the De'Aaron Fox trade. It was before the Grizzlies made it, or the Magic made a trade with the Grizzlies, but for a different Grizzly. And, you know, you're really running out of viable options, and you wind up coming back, as all things do, inescapably to the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. All roads lead to Sacramento when you have...
to one golden way, yeah.
Someone who... isn't a perfect fit in the modern NBA. Let's just send them to Sacramento. They're 30th in three-point attempts in the NBA, so they don't really play to the three ball. Okay, so there's something there with Ja. If you're ignoring the three ball, bring in Ja. Feels like Ja could learn a thing or two about Russell Westbrook and how to represent yourself in an organization. Russell Westbrook might have had some issues at some point in his career, didn't have the same wheels or lift. But you know what? He was a consummate professional in OKC and had a great relationship with his community. And I kind of feel like it might be nice to have a Russell Westbrook, you know, just put his arm around you and lead you to this next chapter in your NBA career. Kind of feels like the wheels are already turning on that front. I have a trade here. DeMar DeRozan's expiring contract, Malik Monk. And they have the 2027 Spurs pick and the 2031 Minnesota pick, as well as their own picks to put into a deal. They also, if the Memphis Grizzlies are looking for someone younger, they can go with Devin Carter, who doesn't seem to be really front and center in the Sacramento Kings plans after being their lottery pick a year ago. That's why Russell Westbrook is on the team and Dennis Schroeder is on the team, is it seems like they don't have too much faith in Devin Carter. I still have faith in him. And maybe Memphis does too. So I just feel like the Sacramento Kings is just—it's just destiny at this point, Dan. And I have two other teams that I think make sense, but I want to—you mentioned Noah LaRoche earlier. He's the assistant coach that implemented a lot of this no pick and roll offense that you said was not, fell on a little bit of deaf ears with Ja Morant in terms of how he wants to operate in that offense. Well, he's leading one of the coolest stories in the NBA in the Miami Heat. And I know people are saying, hey, Pat Riley needs that super duper star and it's going to be Ja Morant. I know Noah LaRoche isn't necessarily more important to the Miami Heat franchise than getting a superstar talent in Ja Morant, but I do think that it wouldn't be a great fit in terms of, hey, we're going to go acquire the guy who is not happy with this offense and it's been really working well for us.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I agree with you on that. And there's some more options that we can go through. Why don't we get us out of here, Tom, and we'll come back on the other side of it and try to try to find some landing spots here.
Yeah, let's get into some of the fits for Ja Morant around the league. I mentioned Sacramento. I've got a couple more, Dan. I know you've got a few here written down. So let's get into that right after the break. But first, I want to remind all the listeners right now, or all the viewers in the Yahoo Fantasy app, you can draft a new league. In Yahoo's newest fantasy basketball format, High Score, it's clean, it's simplified. It is a brand new format where you draft 10 players, you start six, and set your lineup only once per week. Just set it and forget it. High Score only takes your starters' best single games from the week as you go head-to-head against one of your league mates. The NBA season is still early, so get in now. Draft a team on High Score today in your Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com. All right, Dan. Big number this week is 2. That's the number of dunks that Ja Morant, shockingly low number, Ja Morant has so far this season, down from 55, 58 in previous years. It's still early, but shocking number there for Ja Morant. Doesn't bode well for his future in Memphis if he is not that type of player anymore. But other teams might believe. They might still believe. Dan, do you have any that you want to bring to the table here as potential Ja Morant suitors?
Yes, because that's the segment we're doing a show together. I do want to say I'm not like in love with any of this. I would not call myself any kind of trade machine artist. So bear with me here. But here we go. The train rolls on. The little numbers. Our first little number this week is 0.0. You just mentioned our friends in Sacramento. That is Dennis Schroeder's value over replacement player thus far this season for the Sacramento Kings. VORP scores are really low this early in the season because there just hasn't been that much basketball played, so don't get too bent out of shape about it. This is from our friends at Basketball Reference. VORP, for the uninitiated, is a stat that attempts to estimate how much more a player is contributing to his team's performance per 100 possessions than a replacement-level player. Think like somebody you could get on a 10-day off the street or sign for a minimum salaried contract. By this metric, then, Dennis Schroeder has been, well, replaceable so far this season. So let's replace him with Ja Morant, who actually has a negative VORP so far this season, but like, let's not worry too much about that.
We should tell that to Ja, by the way. You should go, hey, Ja, have you noticed you have a negative VORP right now?
Yeah, right. It's like, oh, they told you that in the front office? They told you that? Yeah, then they couldn't have told you something that I didn't
Basketball
know.
Basketball Reference told you that? The VORP?
That's right. Stathead told you that?
What does that stand for, nerd?
Kevin Pelton.
Get out of here.
Kevin Pelton told you that? Yeah, exactly, right. The guys that run our draft room, they told you that? All right, so if Dennis Schroeder was signed as a stopgap option, I think we can all agree with that. A Kings sure. team that was previously flush with starting caliber point guards that has then dispersed them all over the NBA with Tyrese Halliburton in Indiana and De'Aaron Fox in San Antonio and even Davion Mitchell now in Miami. They need a long-term answer at the point, and maybe Ja Morant can be that. A couple years left on his contract. So your starting point for salary matching, you mentioned the DeMar DeRozan expiring. I would imagine if you're doing this, if you're Sacramento, you might like to keep DeMar to try to be as good as you can now. So maybe you're looking at something like Ja to Sacramento for Dennis Schroeder and Malik Monk. The money works out more or less there. What does that make you feel, Tom?
Makes me feel excited because that's a new team for Dennis Schroeder.
that's our main driving force here, is just try to get as many jerseys on Dennis Schroeder as possible. Which, what would that, how many is that now?
He's getting dangerously close to the Ish Smith line.
You know? We're on the third line of his jerseys in Basketball Reference page. Like there's 9 jerseys. No, sorry, there's 11 jerseys on his Basketball Reference page right now. But I believe a couple of those might be like the Hawks changed their design. So yeah. Dennis Schroeder fairly well traveled.
10 teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 teams.
Fairly well, fairly well traveled.
Team for Dennis Schroeder. Yeah. Here we go. Atlanta, he had with 5 years. OKC, 2 years. Lakers, 2 years. Brooklyn, 2 years. And then all of these are 1 year or less. Toronto, Boston, Detroit, Golden State, Houston, and Sacramento. So Memphis. Man. Step on
step
up,
right
man.
Up.
Dan, I love this. let's just get it over with. And if he's going to slowly play for every single team in the NBA, might as well bring Memphis into this. I don't hate this trade. And they obviously, in the talks with Golden State, we reportedly, the Malik Monk offers with Sacramento and our guy, JK, Jonathan Kuminga, it didn't obviously get done. And so Malik Monk, it feels like, could be had. And I think the Kings, I think they would be motivated to bring in with new leadership there, bring in a face of the franchise that can move on from De'Aaron Fox and kind of the Zach LaVine, Ja Morant duo in the backcourt could be formidable. I don't know what it does for your defense, but I don't know what Dennis Schroeder does for your defense either, Malik Monk. But it's just, this feels like, to me, an inevitability, Dan. I'm glad you brought this up. I know you're not super enthused with the idea of any Ja Morant trade and being the artist, and Bill Simmons calls himself the Picasso of the trade machine. I don't know if we have the same acumen when it comes to the trade machine, but I do think SpotTrack is I just want to give another shout out to SpotTrack because that's my favorite. my favorite tool for any sort of trade talks is using SpotTrack's trade machine. And one thing I would love, hey, Keith, if you're listening, I would love to have the ability to dial it up the slider to like December 16th in the trade restriction. So like you could pretend it's December 16th and try some different trades. We'll talk about that in a little bit when it becomes to another team that I'm thinking about. But I like the Sacramento fit if we're looking at motivation, team that would be wanting Ja Morant to come in and try just start from scratch with another player. I don't hate it. And when it comes to Ja Morant suitors, I think I don't hate it is probably as gushing as we're going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, Domantas Sabonis as a pick and roll dribble handoff partner. Maybe there's some chemistry there. The Zach LaVine space in the floor. I don't know how it all works out with him and DeMar DeRozan in the spacing, but, you know, we'll try to figure it out as best we can from there.
But we don't know how it's working out now. Like, no one knows what the Kings are trying to do here. And Doug Christie as the head coach for Ja Morant, maybe he can convince him, hey, I play with Jay Will. And you got great passing talent. So let's try to recreate that here in Sacramento, in Sactown.
There you go. So we'll go from one white point guard to another. Our second little number this week is 96.3. That's how many points per 100 possessions the Dallas Mavericks are scoring with Cooper Flagg playing point guard, according to Cleaning the Glass. If 96.3 points per 100 possessions sounds low, it's because it is. The last team to put up an offensive rating that low for a full season was the 2014-15 Process Sixers. They went 18-64 and they scored 95.6 points per 100 possessions. So that's not good. This is obviously somewhat by design and somewhat by necessity, right? The Dallas Mavericks, if they had everybody healthy, Kyrie Irving would be their point guard. And I think that their offense would probably be a hell of a lot better than it is right now. He is not healthy. And in the absence of better options than D'Angelo Russell, Jason Kidd threw the keys to Cooper Flagg, trying to think, hey, I made Giannis a point guard once. Maybe I can do it again here. I wrote all about this at Yahoo Sports last week. You should go check it out. However, if the experiment eventually becomes too painful for Kidd to keep continuing it, and if Kyrie's return date maybe continues to get pushed further and further out, I don't know. What about something like Klay Thompson, Daniel Gafford, Najee Marshall, Brandon Williams for Ja Morant and Vince Williams? What about something like that where the math would work and then you get a starting caliber point guard in Dallas?
Yeah. How many centers are we going to put on this Memphis team? You know, it feels like they currently have
none that can play. So yeah, maybe not so bad.
Daniel Gafford is one that can play for sure. And I think if you're Dallas, you're motivated to get an actual point guard in there, like you said. I think I would like to entice the idea, not Dallas, but I would like to entice the idea of another team that is really struggling from a point guard standpoint. Move him out of the Western Conference, Dan. I'm going to go with the Brooklyn Nets. Dan?
Okay.
Dan, do you know who the team leader in assists per game for the Brooklyn Nets is right now?
Well, I mean, they got like 38 point guards, so it's got to be one of them, right?
It's Nick Claxton.
Yeah, they're point center, you know, the Jokic of Flatbush, they call him.
The Jokic of Flatbush. Nick Claxton is averaging 3.4 assists, which actually really impressive number for your point center, but not for your team leader. Especially when you have a bunch of point guards that you're trying to figure out your future. Ja Morant, I think an Eastern Conference team would be wise to just check in and see what the asking price is for Ja Morant, especially with Brooklyn having all of those first round picks at their disposal to go after someone, a disgruntled superstar like Ja Morant. So you got Michael Porter Jr.'s expiring contract, which is right around the number of Ja Morant's salary. And then kind of throw in one of your young point guards that maybe Memphis wants to take a chance on. And you start fresh with Ja Morant. I don't know when the Brooklyn Nets are planning to get out of the wilderness here after the KD, Kyrie, and James Harden scary hours experiment did not work out. And then, of course, Mikal Bridges, they traded to New York. When are they trying to hit the reset button again? Or are they going to actually bring in some top shelf talent in John Morant. So I don't, again, like you said, I don't love these trade suitors, but if you're the Brooklyn Nets and you're desperately seeking someone to run an offense, I feel like John Morant has to be in that conversation.
I get it. They are, I think they got burned so badly by trying to microwave a winner that I feel like they would be a little bit gun shy on this. I mean, sorry, gun shy, probably not the best turn of phrase to use with respect to the Ja Morant conversation. They might be a little leery of moving quickly in that direction. I will say the idea of somebody who gets downhill in this Brooklyn offense would be at least something. The only player they have on their team, as of a couple nights ago, so I might not be perfectly up to date on it, that's averaging even like six drives a game was Cam Thomas. And the offense wasn't working well with him because he was just kind of a ball hog. He wasn't sharing the ball with everybody else. So you know, like Ben Saraf not really getting downhill, Yegor Dioman not really getting downhill. You know, Nolan Traore kind of like not even able to play at this point. So yes, I get it. I think the Nets are probably thinking like we've drafted all these guys and we've got a million more picks coming. And the idea of trying like be good now for who, for what? Like, you know, we got our pick this year and it's like might be our last chance because they still owe out swaps to Houston, I believe. Is that right? To Houston? And so they've got like, this might be your best chance to get another top of the lottery home run pick. So
the good thing is John Morant is someone who is actively quiet quitting and known to quiet quit. So if you're going to miss 20 games every year, maybe Brooklyn's like, you know what? That might actually work out for us if we're looking to try to get at the top of next year's draft. So John Morant, I don't think is too good that they wouldn't still be in the running for a top five pick next year. But do you have any other teams? I've got one more that I'm kind of enticed by here. What else you got?
I got one more, and I think we can kind of move through it and maybe dispense with it quickly, but it was worth a look to me. Third little number this week is 0.886. That's how many points per possession the Houston Rockets are scoring out of plays finished out of the pick and roll, according to Synergy Sports. 0.886 is tied for 28th in the NBA, ahead of only the Portland Trailblazers and the Indiana Pacers. And so, like, maybe a pick and roll handling ball handling point guard could be of use there. I know we've talked on this show quite a bit about the Fred VanVleet injury, about Houston maybe being a ball handler short, about Reed Shepard struggling to kind of get up to speed in that role. And when you get to April, May, and June, you know, you're going to need another guy who can be a facilitator and an organizer on offense. It is probably worth noting, though, that even without a traditional point guard, Houston leads the NBA in offensive efficiency and has been mauling people. So any kind of trade that would detract from the identity of we're gigantic and we hammer the offensive glass and that's how we play would probably be a non-starter for them. I think you're looking at something like, you'd also probably have to use the Fred VanVleet contract in the deal matching salary.
Trade restriction until December 15th. So just that, again, Mr. Smith over there at SpotTrack, if you can help us out here and have one of those sliders, it would be very helpful in such trade discussions.
Yeah. So if such restrictions were off, you'd be looking at either something like, you know, VanVleet, Steven Adams, and Jayshon Tate for Ja, and then like Jock Landale or another sort of like smaller salary there. Or if you don't want Adams to be in that mix because he's kind of wildly become too central to Houston's team construction, maybe it's like VanVleet, Shepard, and Dorian Finney-Smith, who hasn't really played for them since signing in free agency, when he's eligible to be dealt for Ja, and again, another middling salary, somebody like John Conchar. That's kind of the framework you'd be looking at. And to me, if I'm Houston, I'm saying, thanks, but I think we're good. But yeah. maybe I'm over-indexing on offensive rebounding right now.
Yeah, I think I love that deal that you're proposing for Memphis. I don't love it for Houston. I think they're good for now. And as you pointed out, and as I wrote at TomTheFinder.com, it was like, wait, the best offense in the NBA right now is the one that doesn't have a point guard or a traditional point guard. And Amen Thompson and Reed Shepard and KD and Alperen Sengun are doing just fine so far. It's early, but man, if things start to derail in Houston, maybe they look to try to upgrade at the point guard position. But right now, I think another team in might be trying to pair their superstar with someone. Not Houston, but I'm looking at Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. I'm wondering if you can get another guy. Just try another big swing. You know what's interesting? Jrue Holiday has two dunks this year. And Ja Morant has two dunks. 67th in the NBA in dunks so far this season. He was number one in the category. I had a bunch of these left over, so I'm just going to regurgitate them. He was number one in the category among point guards a few years ago in dunks. And now he's, you know, outside the top five at the point guard position. And Ja Morant is tied with him. Sorry. Jrue Holiday is tied with him. So no Jrue Holiday in Milwaukee, no Damian Lillard in Milwaukee. What if, now hear me out, Ryan Rollins and Kyle Kuzma for Ja Morant, to get more salary in there to make it work, Bobby Portis would have to leave, and he's kind of the heart and soul of this organization. So maybe they don't do that deal. But Giannis, would he be happy with Ja Morant? I don't know. I don't know if Milwaukee knows this, or maybe I don't even know if Giannis knows how he would feel about that. But if you're talking about a superstar who might not be on the same page as their front office, maybe it's a marriage made in heaven, a match made in heaven between Ja Morant and Giannis. So kind of if you're going all in and tripling down, maybe you do this deal. But Ryan, I love Ryan Rollins' game.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, had two sort of breakout national performances against the Knicks and the Warriors. And so like that, there's a lot to like there. I think from a talent perspective, yeah, you know, Ja would be an obvious infusion. He would elevate the talent base around Giannis, which we had talked about on the show, kind of the supporting cast being a concern. I think what we're seeing in the early going of the season for the Bucks is kind of the best case scenario for what this roster looks like, in that it's a lot of guys who defend, shoot threes, and kind of space the floor around Giannis. And you've seen a real uptick in that from all of those other supporting pieces, with Rollins getting more minutes as Kevin Porter Jr. has been out, and then like defending at a high level while also shooting the ball at a 38-39% clip. That has been sort of central to what Milwaukee wants to be in this roster build. And Ja, with the jump shot problems that we've talked about and the need to reorient more of the offense in his direction, I think would take away from that. It might also reduce the workload on Giannis, which might pay bigger dividends down the road. But it does feel like they've got a vision for how they want this roster to fit. And I don't know that Ja Morant would fit it, which I think brings me back to a fourth and final little number for this week. 505. That's how many minutes the Grizzlies played last season with Ja, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Zach Edey on the floor together. 505 minutes, not a ton for a three-man combo, but more than 500 minutes. And Memphis outscored its opponents by 158 points in those 505 minutes. That's about 15 points per 100 possessions, and that's really good. This season, that trio has played 0 minutes together because Zach Edey hasn't played yet. He's continuing to work his way back from offseason surgery on his left ankle. And that's kind of the quieter context here in Memphis. They don't have Zach Edey. They don't have Brandon Clark, their primary backup big man, who had arthroscopic surgery on his right knee before the season. They don't have Scottie Pippen Jr., Ja's backup, because he had surgery on his left big toe.
They don't even have Jay Huff. They don't have Jay Huff. I mean, who could forget Jay Huff? I love Jay Huff's game. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. The Huff stuffs, the reverse dunks. What's not to love about it? They don't have Ty Jerome. The main offseason addition they made, where they signed Ty Jerome away from the Cavs, he picks up a calf strain right before the start of the season and he's out. So they're doing all, the Grizzlies are playing without half of their rotation while also getting acclimated to a new way of operating under Isolo, who, again, took over the team like a week and a half before the end of last season, and is like just kind of getting his stuff in as we speak. And then with two starting wings in KCP and Jalen Wells, who are shooting a combined 32% from the floor. So like maybe the Grizzlies need to, like, instead of saying things suck right now, we got to trade the face of our franchise, maybe they just need like a deep breath and a little bit of time. And I don't know if Ja Morant's willing to give them that. And if he's feeling unhappy with this, they move in this direction. maybe they've got to move away from it. But like, maybe the answer here is just like, grind it out, see where you are in a couple of months. And if you're not going to get any kind of incredible package right now, maybe you got to just sort of fall back, wait and see where you are.
Dan, I've got some bad news for you on that front. Is
okay.
Here's the upcoming schedule for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh no.
Houston, Dallas, OKC. Then you go on the road at New York, at Boston, at Cleveland, and now on NBA on NBC, at San Antonio against Wemby.
Okay. Right. They flex that one in, which I know is a Wemby conversation, but maybe also it's like a, ooh, I love mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be interesting. NBA and NBC, the debut with Wemby is going to be against Memphis, slated November 18th. So you got Houston, Dallas, OKC, the Knicks, the Celtics, Cleveland, and then San Antonio. And then you got the Kings. Okay, so maybe that's when they hang out and they, you know, have their little coffee together and say, hey, why don't we come to a deal? Then they go Dallas and Denver after that. So the next like 10-ish games, the next month of basketball for them is looking pretty treacherous. And so the conversation is like, man, if Ja's unhappy right now, is there really a flicker of hope in the next, you know, foreseeable future that things can turn around? And in the Western Conference, I don't think you have that at any point in the schedule. And so, Dan, I hear you. Maybe you wait until Zach Edey comes back and then Ty Jerome, and then you kind of reevaluate things. But what if there's just not enough sand in that hourglass for Ja Morant and it just gets really ugly really fast? So that's, you know, speaking of OKC, that's a tough schedule going forward. And we're going to go after the break, we're going to go talk about the only undefeated team left in the NBA is also a team that is shorthanded this season, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Dan, I feel like we need to have a conversation. It's time for a conversation about Oklahoma City because it seems like they're quietly 8-0 and a team that doesn't seem like they're slowing down anytime soon. We're going to talk about that right after the break. All right, Dan, we're going to move off of the whole Ja Morant thing here and talk about a breath of fresh air, which is Oklahoma City Thunder, after winning the NBA championship, after winning 68 games last year, they actually might be better. Just, you know, kind of the idea. One of the reasons why I wrote that column last year is saying they should be America's team. It's because they've got so much growth potential here. Like, this is the worst that they're going to be likely going forward is what they were last year. You look at this season, they've already, you know, gotten off to an 8-0 start with their second leading scorer is AJ Mitchell. Their third leading scorer is Aaron Wiggins. Both are second round picks for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And they haven't gotten one game out of J-Dub, Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren's been in and out of the lineup, right? And they're still 8-0, the only undefeated team left. Dan, I feel like we should be getting in on this early. Are we on the way to a potential record-breaking season? What, 73 wins? The Golden State Warriors, are we headed towards them flirting with 70 and possibly more? I think they are.
Yeah, I don't know how you can, with the exception of saying somebody's going to miss a crazy amount of time, I don't know how you could argue against it. Also, remember, they won 68 last year with Chet Holmgren missing a crazy amount of time and with Isaiah Hartenstein missing, I think, like 25 games or something like that, too. So they are an absolute wagon. I wrote about this at Yahoo Sports, kind of looking at their start when they opened up 7-0 before they beat the Clippers on the road in L.A. on Tuesday night. They're now the third team in NBA history to open consecutive seasons with 7 straight wins. The two teams that did it before them were the 63-64 and 64-65 Celtics and the 93-94 and 94-95 Rockets. Both of those teams won back-to-back titles. So start there. Last season, the Thunder's margin of victory, the average amount they won games by, was 12.87 points per game. That was the biggest in NBA history. So far through 8 games, they're at 13.25, which is bigger than that. They won 68 games last season. They currently have the point differential of a 70-win team, and they haven't had their second best player yet. So I don't know, like, it's not, what's the right way to phrase what I'm thinking? It's not boring. They're fascinating. They're an incredible team to watch. They have incredible parts, and then they are somehow more than the sum of those parts, which is a wonderful thing to see. They're moving like crazy. They're moving the ball. They can, you know, if you don't have one ingredient, Mark Daigneault just goes to the cupboard and brings somebody else out. AJ Mitchell is a developmental success story. Aaron Wiggins is a developmental success story. Isaiah Joe is a developmental success story. You know, all of these. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, frankly, is a developmental success story. All of these guys just keep getting better and better and better. And that recipe of SGA leading the offense, the best defense you've ever freaking seen, and then a whole bunch of dudes who just come in and make the right play constantly is a recipe for an incredible amount of wins. And maybe they're not going to go 82-0, but we might, and they might lose their first game on Wednesday night in against the Blazers when they are on the back end of a back-to-back on the Western Conference. So it's tough out there when you're on those West Coast road swings, but I think what you have to, like, there's a reason everybody said, I think they're going to win the title again this year. And this is why we're seeing it.
Yeah. Here's some other numbers on OKC. Chet has missed 3 games. Lou Dort has missed a game. He's shooting 19% from 3. Okay. Alex Caruso has missed a bunch of games this year. He's shooting right now 36% from the floor. You've got Isaiah Joe, who's missed 5 games. You've got AJ Mitchell, who, again, he is the second guy on the team in points scored this season. He's 7th in the NBA among guards inside 5 feet. Most field goals made inside 5 feet. 7th among guards, AJ Mitchell, second round pick last year. This is insane, guys. Like, when you're watching the Thunder get off to an 8-0 start, and they haven't had most of their roster together, or they can't shoot, and they're still 8-0 with the best point differential in the league, that's scary. Like, that is scary. And so if they're full strength, the only thing that's holding me back is just the Western Conference. It's just the Western Conference is that good, Dan. So the only thing holding me back from thinking they could get to 73 wins a season is the fact that Houston and Denver and the Clippers and the Lakers, they have to play half their season against those guys. So I don't know, man. The Thunder, we talked a lot of just kind of messy stuff with Ja Morant in that situation and the teams that could take Ja Morant and compete in the Western Conference or in the East. We just have to make note, OKC's doing it again, Dan. They're doing it again. So, yeah. It might be all fait accompli at this point if OKC's this good without J-Dub.
Which maybe informs decisions for teams like Memphis, where, you know, like Zach Kleiman said after last season, like, you know, we can't, after they were swept out of the first round by the Thunder, you know, we can't act like we're close. Like, I think we've seen that we're not close. And if you are really not close, and then the person you were chasing is getting even further and further ahead of you, maybe that informs your decision-making and what your time horizon is for trying to build. But I think if that is the way you're operating, though, good luck, because their time horizon in Oklahoma City is awfully, they're set up about as well as anybody ever has been to be really good for a really long time. Maybe not champions every year, who knows, but like, they're going to be in the mix for as long as for the foreseeable future, because they've got the MVP of the league, who looks as good as, if not better than he was last season, a wonderful complement of players, a million picks, and a lot of flexibility for retrofitting the roster around their main guys, who they locked up to long-term contracts over the summer too. So, so much of the beginning of this season has been about what's different, right? We do this every year. We come into the year, oh, now this guy suddenly added this to his game. This team is playing differently. Stylistically, they're doing this. Why are these guys so bad? We thought it was going to work out this way. And then humming sort of along beneath and then also above all of it, the Thunder are just the Thunder, and the Thunder are kicking everybody's ass, and maybe everybody's playing for second no matter what.
It's a quiet Thunder, if there ever is such a thing. Is there something as like a silent thunder? I don't know.
Silent thunder sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like gastrointestinal pain,
I wasn't going to go there, Dan. I wasn't going to go there, but we're at this point in the pod where, you know what? We're there. We're there. I got the Blazers OKC call tonight. I can't wait to see this steel cage match between these two teams because they are both super physical and pressure full court, and they just have a bunch of Tamani Kamara and Kaysen Wallace's everywhere. So I can't wait to watch this game, and I can't wait to see how far the Thunder take this this winning streak and what looks like to be a potential 70 win season for OKC, especially if they get J-Dub back here soon. Dan, that's going to do it for us today. I want to give a big shout out to our producers on the show. Thanks to Emmy and Sarah and the entire squad that makes this show what it is behind the scenes. Thank you for being at the controls and helping us along. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Subscribe to The Big Number wherever you get your podcast, and check us out on yahoosports.tv on the Fast Channel, wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Fast Channels, all that, Dan.
There's one more big five-star review. There's one more big number this week, Tom. Did you forget?
Oh! 50! 50! This is the 50th episode, Dan. The 50th episode of The Big Number. Oh, Emmy, I'm so sorry to mention that at the top of the episode. Thank you again for all the work you do behind the scenes and keeping us in line. Appreciate you. Thank you all the listeners out there. The 50th episode of The Big Number, our weekly show here at Yahoo Sports. I can't believe it, Dan. What are you doing to celebrate?
I'm going to do some more work. And then
Are you going to listen to Get Rich or Die Trying just on repeat for 50, celebrate 50?
That's exactly right. I'm going to celebrate with Get Rich or Die Trying. I'm going to go right into the G Unit record. I'm going to put on my G Unit sneakers. We're really going to get into like 2003 living. It's going to be a wonderful time here at the Divine Household. Yes, thank you so much, everybody, for supporting the show. The haters said it couldn't be done, and frankly, the haters were finally wrong. And it's a lovely thing to see. And we're looking forward to bringing you 50 more, God willing. We're going to cross our fingers and see how it goes.
And then we'll listen to some more G Unit after that.
Many men wish death upon me. Sorry.
No, do not apologize. I was going to let you go. Take us out. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, fire up some Many Men by 50 Cent. The sky no more.